Welcome to the M3 podcast. Your journey to movement, mindset, and medicine starts here. Welcome back, M3 family. It's me, your host, Mermaid Bree. And if you're listening to this in real time, Merry Christmas to you all. I hope you're having an amazing holiday season so far. And I think what a better day to be able to drop this episode than on Christmas, where you are thinking about your New Year's resolutions, the things that you want to have enter into your life, whether it's through health, fitness, relationships, confidence building. We cover all of that in today's episode with my friend Vanessa Brown. She is an endoscopy technician working in the hospitals. She's also an online coach. Her and I work together, training clients in person, online together. I've had her speak at my retreat on strong lifting. She is another strong lifting athlete and somebody who I see deadlifting near 400 pounds, squatting well over 300 pounds. And she embodies the ability to gain lean mass and recomping your body to turn fat mass into lean mass. But it does not matter what's on the scale. We talk about body image, confidence that the gym builds outside of the gym, the ability to move your body through medicine in different forms, whether it's functional training, it's cardiovascular conditioning, it's a mental health in stretching and being able to stretch both the mind and body at the same time. All of these things apply to the general foundations of movement as medicine, which is why she is the creator of Move Med. And I love the fact that she's helping people in hospitals get the same foundation of exercise and building a body that you would expect a hospital to be doing in the first place. How is it that firefighters, lifeguards, other people are getting PT for that 1 hour time? Even the military gets a 1 hour of physical activity where they get to do the physical training as PT, and that's how they spend their paid lunch break. Why doesn't a hospital do this? This should be already foundational for people to have the ability and the privilege to take care of their bodies and have that same privilege and ability to take care of others at the same time. How is it that in the healthcare system, we're taking care of other people and forgetting to take care of ourselves? So Vanessa's here to bring that back to you all, to share her knowledge and expertise. And you can find more information in the show notes here below. But we already started talking as I was asking her more about what she does. I knew she worked in a hospital. I had no idea exactly what it was, but to see a technician who is using that knowledge towards her own injury and applying it, and past injuries, I should say. She's overcoming a few different injuries, including hip and sciatic nerve that we've talked about, her and I, both from deadlifting, that our spine, our low back, our spine was always getting that pinched feeling. And the ability to move in different ways. Not everybody has the same stance for exercises, whether it's deadlifting or squatting or hip thrusting. Our anatomy is shaped differently, and each person needs to respect what their body can do and not compare it to someone else's. That's a physical and emotional. So I'm excited to share with you all today's episode. Welcome, Vanessa Brown.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Nice.
You.
Glad we're doing this.
Me too.
Thanks.
One thing else before we start, because I wanted to ask, is what exactly do you do in the hospitals?
I'm an endoscopy technician.
Whoa.
So I assist physicians with their procedures. And do you know what endoscopy is?
No, but I'm like, I'm thinking colonoscopies.
So endoscopy is when you take a viewing device, a scope, and you go down the mouth.
Yeah,
look at
similar.
The esophagus, stomach, and the first part of the small intestine. So I assist, I'm up at UCSD in La Jolla, and our department is like one of the top departments in the country. Like, our doctors are top tier. people fly in from all over the world to come see our doctors.
Wow.
And some of the most highly respected doctors are who I'm assisting with their procedures. So it's very, they can be very intense procedures. And just like with somebody that like Brett, that is like the best at what he does, you know, he's very particular sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's how a lot of these doctors are, because they have such high standards for themselves. So it's really cool to work with people that are that intelligent, that high achieving. And I start to notice parallels in personality. So somebody like Brett, who is so, you know, so hardworking and so intelligent, I see his personality type in some of the doctors that I work with that are just, will stop at nothing, you know, to achieve what they want to achieve and to reach the level of perfectionism that they want. So it's really interesting. I love that job because it pushes me. I get to learn so much about medicine, and I see what the average life is like, or I guess like the life of the average American, especially working in healthcare, because people are so burnt out in healthcare. And it's, my department is a more of a classic 9-to-5, like Monday through Friday, 5 days a week. So people that work there full-time, I'm only 3 days a week part-time, thankfully. Mm-hmm. But people that work there full-time, it's so brutal. The type of lifestyle that, again, like the average American lives, because there's not really a place for fitness in the average American's lifestyle. You know, when you talk about, so say you work a 9-to-5 shift, especially if you work far away from your home. You're spending 30 minutes or an hour commuting to work. You get to work, you work your 8-hour job plus like 30 minute lunch. Mm-hmm. You spend another 30 minute an hour commuting home in traffic. Mm-hmm. You know, like right there, that's 10 and a half hours of your life, 5 days a week. Like, where does fitness fit into that? Like, where does going to the gym, where does meal prepping fit into that? Like, add in a family, add in, you know, some like just mental downtime.
Yeah.
Making your meals. Like, no wonder. Like, it's a broken system, is what I'm seeing. So, like, it's very helpful.
I know we were going to do a whole introduction to this, but yeah. I already, this is it. This is, we're starting. This is
nice.
It.
Nice. Nice.
Okay, so you work in the hospitals at UCSD,
mm-hmm.
and the people that you see come in and out, do any of them have a morning, evening routine lifestyle? Do they get up early? Do they take time for themselves? Like you just said, where does that fit in?
Yeah, there's some people that do. And I noticed like they're very, I guess they're very hardworking people, you know, like they're very like, it takes time to dedicate that much time to yourself, you know, and it's definitely, it's less common with people that have kids,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's an extra effort. And I see that in some of my clients as well. You know, I have a couple clients that get up at like 4:30 in the morning because they work that lifestyle of a job where it's, get up at 4:30, go to the gym, do your hour workout, take your kids to school, then go to work, come home, cook dinner for your kids, go to sleep, start over again. And, you know, like that level, you have to be that dedicated. And it has to be that level, like your habit is already built in. So, yeah, it's, I've been trying to help some of my coworkers develop that habit, but it's hard to navigate, absolutely.
Which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
Because that's a brand new project for you.
Yeah.
Okay, so you just said you work part-time, but I don't know you to work part-time. I see you working.
I work part-time at that job.
At that job, exactly. So let's talk about all the hats that you wear,
yeah.
because I also see you growing your business, and mm-hmm. congratulations on that. That's so cool.
Thank you. It's exciting.
And you are training people in person. You train online. Mm-hmm. You work in a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You're building courses online mm-hmm. as well. So, what all do you do?
So... 3 days a week in a hospital. One day a week we have weekday calls. So that means I'm on standby
mm-hmm.
either late or overnight. So sometimes that's a 12-hour shift. Sometimes that's you go in at 3 a.m. to do an emergent case. One weekend a month, I'm on call through the weekend. So it's like standby Saturday through Sunday. So that's one job. And then I have 3 or 4 in-person clients. I have another 6 or 7 that are online. Then I have about 20 separate people that I program for. So that is another portion. And then I'm always trying to learn. So I'm making those courses for beginners, helping make fitness more accessible for people, especially just starting out. And I'm also really interested in learning about movement patterns, which we've talked about a lot. So I'm always picking your brain. about how we're similar with our movement patterns.
Yes. And I want to dive into that as a whole other topic. We're talking about your hip and everything too, and how your deadlift has changed completely.
Yeah.
But going back into the course that you're creating right now, you just mentioned that you're helping people in the hospitals with foundational movements, because there's people that you see are surprisingly helping other people with their physical health, but yet aren't taking care of their own physical health enough. Yeah. And these foundational movements, this project, who is it for and how is it going to help them?
Mm-hmm.
What is it called?
Yeah, so it's called Mastering the Foundational Movements. Mm-hmm. It's a video series. There's 5 different videos, and it's based off of the movement patterns that Brett has taught us, or mm-hmm. that he's highlighted with our compound lifts. So it is the hinge, which is our deadlift. It's a squat, which is, you know, our squat and our knee dominant movements. Mm-hmm. It's how to master the hip thrust, so, you know, like our hip extension and hip thrust that we do. And then mastering the upper body pull, which is our chin up, and then mastering the upper body push, which our bench press and our overhead presses.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason I started making that is because I've been trying to help so many of my coworkers in the hospital that know what I do. They follow me on Instagram and they come and approach me. And they ask me, okay, I know I need to get strong, which is amazing that people even know that, because I think over the last 10 years, there's been a huge shift of, okay, I'm just trying to be the skinniest, do as much cardio. People understand how important strength training is. And they at least know about it for health benefits, you know, physique and strength. But I think people are starting to recognize that it's also injury prevention and how physical our daily lives are. And I'm hoping that people start to realize how important strength training is for making your daily life easier, more accessible, and then also preventing future injury. So I'm starting to have people come to me, and over the last year or so, wanting to learn how to strength train. They all say the same thing, as I don't have enough time to go to the gym or to meet with a personal trainer, but I want to start. How do I start?
Mm-hmm.
And so at first I was like, okay, well, I already have a whole online business. I'll just write them a program. So I go to write the program, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm not just going to have them deadlift. You know, you can't just have somebody start with a barbell and start deadlifting from the ground. That's a big movement. Okay, what's our regression from there? What's our foundation? Our foundation is the hip hinge. So I programmed an RDL, thinking like, oh, just go do an RDL. And one of the doctors that I programmed for, his name's Dr. Chang. I don't think he'll mind me mentioning him on this.
No.
It's been so much fun programming for him. And he was one of the people that came up to me and was like, I want to learn how to lift. I have stuff at home. Or I could get stuff, like, how do I learn how to lift weights? He had a little bit of background in it, but he wanted to get stronger. So I programmed him an RDL. And he, luckily, we see each other twice a week at work. And so he came up to me and he was asking me, like, okay, how do I do this? And he was showing me, and I realized, I was like, oh my God, the average person, hip hinging is really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us do not know how to naturally just hip hinge. We all squat. Whether we squat right, we all squat. But you can go your whole life without really hip hinging. You can bend at the knees. You can round your back. But how many people really know how to push their hips back, put tension on their hamstrings and their glutes, maintain core pressure, and actually hinge backwards? And so he was showing me, and luckily it was so funny. We're in like the middle of our GI suite. There's like patients getting rolled by. My coworkers looking around, like looking at him, like doing kind of movements in the hallway. They're like, what are you guys doing? And so I was showing him how to properly hip hinge. And I realized, okay, just programming somebody how to do an RDL, they can watch a video, you know, you can give them cues, but unless you explain kind of our purpose, how it's applicable to life, how step-by-step to execute it, proper drills on how to do it so you have tactile cues and not just like, okay, I think this is how I'm moving. And then also watching themselves move on camera. It's like you kind of need all those different components
mm-hmm.
in order to master something like that. So I started realizing, like, okay, not only do I have to break these down and regress these from the start, but I have to be thorough with it. And they could just go look it up on YouTube, but I think we've all struggled with social media recently.
Yeah, and just to backtrack, I see a lot of people understanding the form and technique during a movement, but they're not realizing that that applies to even just picking up a plate or a dumbbell or anything when you're loading, deloading, when you're picking up your backpack off the ground or something. Like, that all comes from practical daily movement.
Yeah.
If you're gardening, if you're cooking, how do you actually keep your posture intact? So it's to me, it's like people think of these things like, oh, I have to do this while I'm doing the movement itself. But what about all the times around that movement?
Yeah.
Throughout your day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's what I started realizing, again, going back to injury prevention, is how physical our hospital jobs can be.
Mm-hmm.
So as a technician, my job is to not only take care of the scope before and after the case, like set it up, break it down. I assist the physicians mid-procedure, so anything interventional that they want to do, I assist them with it. So they're controlling the scope, and then we use a variety of different instruments. We have a channel that we put the instruments down the scope, and so the scope's in the patient, and then if we want to do anything like take biopsies, put in stents, we go up into the biliary system and we'll sweep out stones out of the bile duct.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there's cancer up in the bile duct and you have, if you get that blockage of bile, that's when people, have you seen people turn yellow and they have that yellowish tint to their skin?
I'm just even thinking of like myself, sorry, this is probably TMI, but like if you've ever gotten like sick and you're vomiting and then like what's left over is the bile.
Exactly. Yeah, that bile. So if that's not draining properly,
yeah,
people get this yellowish tint to their skin. It's called jaundice, which I'm sure you've probably heard that term before. So we go up and we go into the bile, the common bile duct, and basically troubleshoot whatever's going on up there. And so all those different devices that we put up, it's my job to do that, but I'm also in charge of helping position the patient and moving patients. I mean, think about the people you see walking around in America. Those people come in for a procedure. It's my job to help move those people. And half the time, you know, so the bed's here, right? I'm reached across the bed. I'm bent over. I'm hip hinging, right? And I'm pulling that sometimes 400-pound person towards me, or helping push him away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a couple times where I, you know, we do the movement, then afterwards I'm like, oh my God, I'm so glad I'm strong, because the second that I'm in that like mode of positioning,
mm-hmm.
I think, okay, hip hinge back. Okay, I have that tension on my posterior chain. I'm bracing my core, and 1, 2, 3, ready to move. And it takes a lot of strength. And there's been a couple instances, I mean, you know, about my strength, you know, I'm not gonna like downplay that, like I'm very confident in my strength, but there's been a couple times where I think to myself afterwards, wow, I'm really glad I'm strong. That was a difficult thing to do, and if I wasn't as strong, or if I wasn't as aware of my body, I could have seriously hurt myself. And it happens time and time again. I have a couple of my coworkers who, especially nurses, as they're helping their patients get dressed, or you know, prepping them, that they hurt their backs, or they hurt this, or they hurt that, because it's a very physical thing that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So it just like, it blows my mind that, like you're saying, what we're doing in the gym, it's prepping us for our daily lives. And people think about strength training, especially like kind of glute lab, like, oh, it's aesthetics, like, oh, build a booty. It's like, okay, yeah, like that's fun to do, but the main benefit, you know, is prepping our bodies for what we're doing in our daily lives.
I actually think the same thing too, just even when it comes to picking up another person, or I was helping my stepdad yesterday with PT exercises, and I it's like you think about, I just saw a meme the other day and I was like, man, this is so true. It's like, I'd rather be the oldest person in the gym than the youngest person in the nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
And
I saw that one.
Yeah, you know what
it's
I'm talking
so
about.
So true.
Yes.
It hits home.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you think about all these things that it's like, okay, we initially want to get into shape maybe for aesthetics, but then we start to realize the underlying benefits that matter. When you get to the past the surface level, to the depth of it, that's where true strength comes from, not just being in the gym, but everything that you do outside the 4% of that day.
Yeah.
And you started strength training how long ago?
I started lifting weights in the gym in 2017, so 6 years ago now.
And then in the last few years, when did you join Glute Lab?
2020, so 3 years.
And
which
how
is crazy,
has,
it feels like so long.
Right?
I can't believe it's only 3 years.
How has it changed over those last 3 years from the last six?
So much. So I was lucky enough that I had somebody convince me basically to start lifting. Back when there was no women in the weight section, you know, I was like out in the YMCA, out in East County. And I had a friend of mine who had just become a personal trainer, a good friend of mine from high school. And like a little backstory on me, in high school, I was the jock, like definitely the jock girl. I did 1 year, I did, for 2 years, I did 4 varsity sports in the same year, which is the first time anybody's ever done that in my high school. They actually made a whole patch for me for my Letterman jacket.
So cool.
Yeah, so I think I ended up having like 13 varsity letters in high school, which I'm sure was also like hadn't been done before. But basically, every sport I played, I was varsity.
Wow.
So I was very much the person that was into sports, into movement. And then I got into college, and I went to UCSD and got my bachelor's in human biology. And I could have gone to college for water polo, which was one of my main sports, but I wanted to go to UCSD, and I knew that I wouldn't be able to get the degree I wanted to get if I was playing on a sports team. I knew I was going to be like a pro player and make money off of it. So it's like, okay, you know, I'll retire like sports for now. And so I was faced with kind of the common dilemma of how do I keep working out? What is life like after high school sports? You know, especially when you identify very strongly.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was so much of my identity, was the girl that was good at sports. You know, the girl that was athletic.
Yeah.
So I got to college and I was like, well, I ran cross country in high school. You know, I can't play water polo anymore. I don't really want to swim, which is another one of my sports. But I ran cross country and I ran track, so I guess I'll just be the girl that runs. I liked my body when I ran.
Lots of cardio.
Oh, yeah. It's funny, I was a cardio girl, but water polo is so much like strength and cardio.
Yeah.
Yeah, swimming is too. You know, you see swimmers and they're like, they're swimmers, you know? Runners are like, okay, I'm a runner. But swimmers are like cardio, but also muscle. But yeah, I got to college and I was like, okay, I guess I'll be the runner. I saw the runner body, and you know, running was like being skinny was so in for so long, like 90s, 2000s, like skinny, skinny too. That was our beauty standard.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, well, the runner body is a skinny body, you know, that's what's beautiful. Like, I'll just run and it'll feel good, and I'll stay skinny and cool. And like, did you ever go through a running phase?
Oh yeah, I ran a marathon and all the
I did a half marathon.
Yes.
How was your marathon experience?
I twisted my ankle right before, took a Percocet, taped it up, and said, let's go.
Uh-huh.
And so with like a fat bruise on it, it was like sprained entirely.
Yeah.
And it was one of those like mentally, it was more of a mental challenge than anything else. My hips died after, I swear.
God, yeah, it's so brutal. Running's so brutal on the body.
And then running half marathons felt like easy after that too.
Yeah.
But I went from running a marathon into the same year training for a bikini competition and then switched over to bodybuilding from there. And I like haven't been a big runner since.
Yeah.
Although it's still ingrained. Like the body can still run fast. It can still run far.
Once you have that basis.
Yes.
Strength's kind of the same way. It's like once it's there and it's like you might lose it for a little bit if you don't do it, but it comes back fast.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's very true. Okay, so you started running like crazy.
Running all
Did
the time.
Did your body change from high school to college doing that?
Yeah, yeah. So I went to college, right?
Mm-hmm.
I lived like on campus, joined a sorority, started drinking, you know, partying, like that whole thing. Different food. Was running, but my body was changing and not in the way that I wanted it to.
Mm-hmm.
So I always had a good amount of muscle. I was like strong from swimming and water polo, but I couldn't get myself to run more than 3 or 4 miles. It wasn't fun. It's a solo activity, you know, it's so solitary. I could put in music, but it almost felt like everything that I was doing in my life was to take away from myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I was running to be small. I was afraid to eat because I knew if I ate more that I would probably gain weight from it, right? So I started trying to focus on eating as least amount of calories as possible. I was actually known for, my roommate used to make fun of me, she didn't know it, but she used to make fun of me that everything I ate, I made a salad. And it was because I was terrified of eating, I was terrified of carbs. So I was like, okay, how can I eat as little as possible? Well, I will just eat, you know, like minimal. Sometimes I would go, this is not something I really talk about, but there was days in college that I would go to like 3 p.m. and then the first thing I would eat at 3 p.m. would be like an 80 calorie yogurt. And then I'd be, again, trying as hard as I can not to eat at the end of the day, starving, so depressed. You know.
Yes.
You know the life of just, again, everything was to be the smallest version, punishing, to take away from yourself. you know, that tear down mentality. And then there was days that, you know, especially on the weekends, where I just couldn't do that. And I would feel like a failure when I would get home at the end of the day and eat a ton of food. And looking back, I mean, especially saying aloud, kind of like restrict and binge, mm-hmm. that cycle. And I like to think of myself as a pretty happy person, but those years in college, thoughts crossed my mind that had never crossed my mind. You know, it was a whole different side of me, and I didn't really show it to a lot of people. My roommate knew, she could definitely tell, but she didn't know me before, so I don't think she could really see the difference. I wasn't really around my family as much, so I don't think anybody really noticed. I think I became pretty good at hiding it, but there's some dark, dark times in there. It's times that it's still, I don't really talk about with many people. And yeah, luckily I ended up coming across one of my high school friends when I was back at home. I moved home my third year, started going to the gym, and I was running on a treadmill, which is terrible. Outside running is bad, running on a treadmill is terrible. But actually during this time, I got a little bit better at restricting myself. Not that in retrospect that I, like that was a success of any kind, but I started getting really good at restricting myself and running. So I, in college, the first years, I think I probably gained like 15 or 20 pounds. Mm-hmm. And that people noticed, because I remember one of my coworkers at my lifeguard job even made like a passing remark about it. And that's when I was like, oh, okay, people can see the physical change. I think that's kind of what spurred my ability to restrict myself more. And I lost a good amount of that weight, but through unhealthy ways. So again, yogurt at 4 p.m., salad for dinner, running 5 or 6 miles instead of the 3 I was running the first couple years. And I don't know when I would have stopped doing that, but luckily one of my friends from high school, like I was mentioning earlier, became a personal trainer, and he saw me at the gym running and doing abs. On Wednesday I would do abs.
Cute. I remember ab days.
Ab days. I don't know that girly more. But he came up to me, and he knew my background in high school, and he said, Vanessa, I just became a personal trainer. Can I try a program on you? He's like, do you want to start this program? And it was a classic 5x5, 5 sets of 5
yes,
reps.
Yes.
Squats, deadlift, bench, overhead press. Sound familiar?
Yep. And so you liked the program.
Oh, I love the program. I went from running, which was miserable, so much mental strain, towards something that he taught me kind of like the basics of how to do each movement, mm-hmm. And allowed me to, you know, dive into something that was each week building a little bit more. So, I mean, I didn't know at the time, but it was progressive overload, right? He told me 5 sets of 5, try to do a little bit more weight in at least one of the sets each week. And it was so addicting to go to the gym. You know, maybe I started squatting at like 135, and the next week it'd be 140. I was like, oh, that's kind of fun. Like, I got a little bit better. Next week, 145. And then that started to get a little more challenging. So maybe the week after it'd be 150 for a couple sets and 145. It's like, okay, like this is getting hard, but I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting a little bit better. And that feeling of building was so different from the feeling of taking away that I was doing before. The mental idea of just trying to be small and trying, like, everything, all my energy was focused on tearing away from myself and tearing down myself. Mm-hmm. And now I was focused on something that was building up myself. And then, you know, like little by little, you know, when you start lifting, you start getting hungry. And I didn't eat that much at first when I started lifting, because I was just, I didn't realize that I was building muscle. I didn't start for physique. I started for it like to be an outlet, but it was never like, oh, I'm going to build muscle and look better. If anything, I was a little scared, because we knew, or at least my image of a girl that lifted was the CrossFit body, that kind of thicker, a little bit more masculine look. Mm-hmm. So I was a little bit afraid of turning into that, but it just felt good to finally do something that was building. So I was like, okay, like, I don't really care what it makes me look like. I'm just going to do it. You know, and then I started making friends in the weight room. Running is so solitary for the most part. But then it was like me and the 4-year-old men getting after it in the weight section. And instead of, you know, just like being by my lonesome on some road, it was me and it was like some of my dad's friends in the weight section, you know, like retired firefighters.
Yes.
I'm like, aren't you Tom Brown's daughter? And I'd be over there, like, on a deadlift platform. So it was just such a, like, it was just such a positive feeling and having that community. And again, building yourself and not tearing down. So that's what kind of started it for me.
Hey, M3 family, check this out. Whether you're a fitness enthusiast or someone looking to take that first step towards a healthier you, First Form's got you covered. Their high-quality supplements are designed to help you perform at your very best, from premium protein powders, complete micronutrient packs, and cutting-edge pre-workout formulas that will kickstart your workouts. First Form is all about getting real people real results, and I'm one of them. I've been using First Form supplements consistently for over 2 years now, and the difference in my overall health is incredible. I've been hitting new personal bests in the gym, getting better quality sleep, and feeling completely energized throughout my entire workday. What sets First Form apart is their commitment to quality and education. They provide the best nutrient-dense ingredients, plus their products are backed by rigorous testing and research. And guess what? They've got a special offer just for M3 listeners. Click the link in the show notes to explore the full range of supplements and receive free shipping on your next order. So don't wait. Take the first step towards a healthier, happier you with First Form, because I know your goals are within reach and I'm here to help you crush them. Thank you, First Form, for supporting our show, and thank you all for listening. Now let's get back to our podcast.
And I just fell in love. I was like, this is what I want to do.
So I love that you just mentioned the mentality before was to chisel down, tear your body literally down into that smaller size, and then you focused on something that builds you up.
Yeah.
Just to give the audience some perspective here, what has been your all-time greatest squat?
I squatted 330 pounds a couple years ago now.
Strongest deadlift?
395 pounds.
Strongest hip thrust?
600 pounds.
There you go. See, just to give some perspective on what these heavy weights are, is people don't realize that we have so much more of an uplifting perspective when we get to focus on the things that help build us.
Yeah.
And you and I've had a really in-depth conversation over the scale, because that was something too where I had overcome an eating disorder and my lowest weight was around 115 pounds. And I laugh at that because I'm sitting at like a comfortable 140 right now.
Yeah.
Do I look like that comfortable 140? No, I probably look a lot leaner than somebody in perspective, but we're really dense. And you and I have even mentioned this where it's like men, they like have this certain weight, like, and you've commented to me, like, I weigh probably as much as my dad.
Yeah.
And you and your dad have completely different bodies, and you still have maintained your curves. You have a six pack, like, you have such a dense, beautiful body.
Thank you.
It's all focused on what you can use to uplift and help build yourself, the things that you get to gain from that.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate it. It's so funny because you describe us as dense, which I think. You from like 5 or 10 years ago, if somebody had called you dense, like if somebody had called me dense, I would have sat there. I would have been like, that was so rude if somebody had called me dense. And I probably would have thought about it and probably eaten a little bit less for the next couple weeks or months because of it. Now, I call myself dense all the time. And I say it with like, like I'm dense. Like I'm very dense. And it's a badge of honor for me. You know, it's almost like something I'm bragging about. It's just an interesting shift in perspective.
I actually had a seizure, side note, was mixed up medication here. So it had nothing to do with like in-depth health concerns, but mental health medication actually. So I had a seizure outside of a restaurant and my friend's boyfriend had tried to pick me up and he had said that word to me, dense. And I actually thought in my head, like, okay, we got muscle. Like,
yeah.
Like it makes you think about your body a different way too. Cause he was like, I didn't realize you were that heavy.
Trust me. Especially when I tell people how much I weigh, it's always like a no. Even my closest friends, well, especially like this year, you know, I've definitely been, we've been talking about leaning into gaining a bit of weight. And I was just telling my roommate, who's been my best friend since like 17 or 18, so she's seen me through all the stages. I was telling her how much I weigh this week. She's like, no, that's just because of Thanksgiving. I said, no, Victoria, I've been this weight for about a month now. Like, I actually lost weight over Thanksgiving. Like, I don't know how, against all odds. But, like, this is me now. This is not a fluctuation. I'm sitting pretty at this weight right now.
And it's people like Lele and Carly who have shown you that, like, quote unquote, be big bitches. Like, that's, yeah. that's the motto. It's like, to be big is to be powerful, to be strong, to change the definition of what big means.
Yeah.
It's not big as a negative thing. It's big as a powerful thing.
Yeah. Well, this was just a thought I had the other day. We talked about, yeah, I weigh as much as my dad right now. It's like the running joke in my family. And I was thinking about it, and I was like, okay, on average, the average guy weighs more than the average girl. But when they're gaining weight, and when did being heavy become such a masculine thing? Because at the weight I'm at now, I have never felt more feminine.
Yes.
I have the most developed glutes I've ever had in my life, and I didn't get those until I started feeling comfortable with gaining weight. Mm-hmm. And so gaining weight, having more muscle, actually made me way more feminine than I was when I was 20 pounds lighter. So I always associated, and even now, there's still a disconnect. I still feel a little uncomfortable if I'm dating a guy, and like the issue of weight comes up, or like, oh, how much do you weigh? I feel a little bit hesitant to tell a guy my weight, because I'm worried that he will feel emasculated if I weigh as much or more than him. And, you know, it's definitely an interesting thing, because that doesn't define my femininity, but I still feel that way. But, you know, it's some sort of, I'm sure, a little bit on, like, the human nature level.
I'm wondering why a guy would need to know that information in the first place. I understand that people are, like, in a long-term relationship, and they, like, are just genuinely curious. But if, like, that's, like, a first date topic, guys,
no guy's actually asking that on a first date. It's more just, it comes up in passing. It's never, like, a question how much you weigh. Because guys
are probably curious, like, how strong you really are, and they're going to make it relative to their weight and their strength.
Yeah.
They're asking because they want to know about themselves and how they compare.
Yeah, it is interesting dating when you're on the stronger side as a woman. Mm-hmm. So I used to say it proudly. Now I kind of give it a couple of days before I tell them how much I deadlift. I'm like, oh, I'm not going to do that to you, dude. I'm sorry.
Going to deadlifts, you've changed your deadlift significantly, and this has come from a prior injury that you had, and it's evolved the way you change your entire strength training programming now.
Yeah.
So give us a little background of how you got injured, and then what has changed for you when it comes to developing strength and making sure that form is the priority over everything else.
Yeah, so this kind of comes back to why I'm making this foundational movement series, mm-hmm. is that nobody taught me really how to squat. Nobody taught me how to deadlift. So I had a friend that was at that personal trainer who gave me that program, and I worked out with him, and I worked out with some other people from high school, and they taught me kind of like the foundations of how to move, but never really quite like proper technique. And I only worked out with them maybe in like my first 6 months to a year. I don't remember the exact timeline, but there wasn't somebody like by my side watching my form as I progressed the whole time. A lot of the stuff that I learned was from Instagram. I was following Brett. I was following Katie Saunier. Speaking of powerful women.
Yes, Saunier is a great, big version of being powerful.
She was the one that inspired me to pursue strength in the first place. I was telling you, I was terrified of becoming like a CrossFit body. I would look at her and how she worked out, how she looked, but then also just the energy and the aura of a strong woman that wasn't afraid to pursue getting stronger. Mm-hmm. And she is my absolute, you know, she's always been that person that like pushes me, and I'm so cool that I got to meet her and got to know her personally, and
yes,
you know, just everything that I saw online like really aligned with like who I met in person. So try not to fangirl too hard about her.
But she's got a movement going on.
But she's got a freaking movement. You know, like how cool to be able to inspire people like that. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of what I learned was from Instagram. How to write a program for yourself. So like my friend Jack wrote me my first program. Followed that for a long time. But eventually I started following Katie. And then I started following Brett. And I realized, okay, Brett posts a lot about how to structure your own program. How to structure a training day. And I would... This was in the time where Instagram was all about education too, which helped me so much. So much of what I was doing in the gym was influenced by what I saw on social media. And it takes a while to figure out who's saying the good stuff and who's saying the not so good stuff. Mm-hmm. But largely, like the progress that I made, I attribute to what Brett posted on his social media in those first couple of years I was in the gym. But there wasn't a lot of foundational work. You know, it was under the assumption that you already knew how to hip thrust. Under the assumption that you were already squatting or already deadlifting, there wasn't a ton of like proper movement patterns. And so, you know, the human body you load something up, it'll figure out how to move the weight. Our bodies are amazing. It just figures it out. And we've all had that experience where maybe you push a little bit harder and you get that form failure and you still get the weight up, but it looks funky doing it. Like, that's your body figuring out which muscles and which movement patterns can be strongest to execute the weight. Might not be that, like, very proper.
It's like a baby standing up for the first time.
Yeah. It's just like, okay, well, this is how it's going to happen today.
All wobbly and everything.
All of our stripper squats, our squat mornings that we do, yeah, that's because it's like, oh, well, my quads can't do this, but my glutes, my hamstrings can. Yeah. My low back can.
Yeah.
So that was what I did for the longest time is, okay, I don't really know what the proper way is, but I'm just going to copy what I see on social media, how other people move. I'm going to make my movements look like their movements mm-hmm. with no regard for the differences in our body types. Just, this is what I see. This must be right. Let me move this way, and let me build strength that way. And I built a lot of strength that way. And not saying that was necessarily a bad thing, but it was just so on the extreme of loose form for the longest time.
And then how did you get injured?
Yeah, so, and not saying this is just because I pushed loose form, because I know how complicated pain and injury can be, you know, and it's not... I don't want to scare anybody into thinking that if they have a couple sets of loose form that they're suddenly going to get injured. Getting injured actually pushed me really far into wanting to understand like what was happening and why it happened. So my perspective versus when I first got injured versus now is very different. But I got injured because for some reason something in my one hip and then eventually the other hip couldn't tolerate the amount of load that I was putting on it. So I was doing plus 300 squats consistently. I didn't really focus on, Brett had me focusing on like some strict form, but I'm looking back, like I knew at the time I was pushing loose form. I was, you know, kind of young and kind of probably a little bit too idealistic thinking, okay, it'll never happen to me. You know, like I can squat this much and be fine and push myself. And I liked the feeling of pushing myself like that. Mm-hmm. Even when my back would start to round during a squat. It was
same.
I guess you can push yourself that way. Yeah. But one day I was, it's actually when I was in Vegas with Brett that I first felt it. But I did a heavy deadlift and the next day I squatted. And for the first time I felt a shooting pain in my hip. Ooh, I remember asking Brett, like, very vividly, okay, so if I do a full-range squat right now, my hip really hurts. Should I keep doing it? And, like, I knew the answer. He's like, no. Are you sure? Like, I can still squat. And he's like, no. Like, don't do that. He's like, okay, do it to a box instead.
Yes.
So I said, okay, and we limited my range of motion, which is a great way to work around injury.
Yeah.
Limit my range of motion. I didn't have any pain when I did that. So yeah. I pushed some heavy squats that way. And, you know, I was like, okay, that's that. It doesn't hurt doing that. That's great. And then I got
Which
back.
Which is a great tip for people.
Great tip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If that bottom range of motion is hurting you, yeah, like, don't push through that pain. You know, like, find ways to, like, work around it. So I tried to work around it. But I didn't really listen to some of the signals that my body was telling me. And I refused to pull back, truly. So I kept pushing. Like, I found ways to work around it, but I'd push myself even harder because of it. Because I was scared I was going to lose progress.
Isn't that funny how we understand our body's ability at its peak, that we expect it to turn out that way every single time?
Yeah.
And I'm just even thinking, like, TMI again, but, like, I started my period yesterday and was like, yeah, I can still work out the same way, and my body will send the signals of, like, no, we're bloating, we're cramping, we're tired, we're fatigued. Like, don't push yourself on your peak day.
Uh-huh.
And that goes the same for injuries, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I just did the same thing Sunday. I say this like I've, like, learned my lesson, but we went out on Saturday night.
Yeah, or going out and partying.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and then Sunday I got into the gym, and I was really invested in my frog pumps, and I was like, I'm just going to go for one PR. Like, maybe it'll feel really good, even though I got 4 hours of sleep. Like, maybe it'll feel great. It did not feel great. And today I'm like, oh, my body doesn't feel great. Like, oh, I wonder why. So it's something that you learn time and time again, and you make the same mistake time and time again.
Listen to the signals.
Yeah, but at that point, I wasn't listening to my body. I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to, you know, find a way to push myself because, God forbid, I lose progress. God forbid, I can't squat 330 at every single point in my life. You know, so I didn't listen to my body. I pushed through it. And then I really flared it up. Like, really flared up to the point that everything in my daily life hurt. And the pain was just a constant reminder that I had done something wrong. Mm. And I was terrified of the pain. I was like, I'm never going to squat or deadlift again. Because everything hurt. Any movement in the gym I did, it hurt. And it was such, like, I fell into a depression because of it. Mm-hmm. It was crazy because I thought I had pulled that girl from college. I thought she was gone. You know, like those dark days, like I was like, oh, I found weightlifting. It's been like 3 years. I've worked through that stuff, you know. But I did not realize how much my sense of self was now again tied to being the girl that was strong. You know, I was a girl that was athletic and really sporty. Lost that, fell into depression because of it a little bit. Started lifting, got hurt, and I was back in the same place of, oh my God, you know, I've now lost my identity again. And it was so interesting. I remember, like, now thinking back about it, I was torturing myself. It's like, what if I never can squat again? What if I can never deadlift again?
Your identity was attached to that.
Oh, so intertwined in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's still something that I think about because I still identify very strongly as the girl that has a lot of muscle, the girl that's strong, you know, the girl that's very fit. So that's a fear of mine. Was like losing that because I know that's going to do something to my identity. So it's something I've been trying to just be cognizant of going forward.
Gosh, you dive into the gratitude of being able to do those movements, even at their bare minimum when it gets to that point too.
Yeah. Yeah. You take it for granted. Mm-hmm. Now, at first I was like, okay, what if I can never squat over 300 again? Like, what am I going to do? And then I was like, wait, what if I can never squat again? You know? And then once you start squatting again, you're like, what if I could never squat 300 again?
Yes,
so once you get it back, you're like, well, now I want more.
Yes.
So it's funny.
So you met with a chiropractor and she taught you something different. What was that?
Yeah, so her name is Dr. Jen Nelson. So I was saying that I used to go out to the YMCA out in East County. And it was me and a bunch of like middle-aged guys in the gym, you know, like just deadlifting. I'd walk in and some of the guys, it's funny because some of them still follow me on Instagram, like comment on some of my deadlifts, but I'd walk in, they'd be bench pressing like 315 or something. They're like, oh, Vanessa, is today deadlift day? I was like, yeah, Dave, it is. You know, they're like, all right, what are you gonna go for today? I'm like, I think I'm gonna go for 225. Like, I think today's the day. And so it was actually at that gym that one of the men that worked there was a family friend. Our brothers went to high school together. And I was telling him about how, I think at that time I was having low back pain. Mm. And that's been a thing that's plagued me for a long time. It's actually a blessing in disguise. Your body just communicating you in different ways.
Yeah.
But I was like, I have this low back pain, I don't know what to do about it. And he said, oh, my daughter's a chiropractor. Like, you should go see her. She's super knowledgeable. I was like, oh, sure, I'll go try her out. You know, I'd never met her before, but I knew their family, trusted their family. So her name's Dr. Jen Nelson. Went to go see her, and oh, she's absolutely changed my life. She's the one that's taught me a lot about awareness of how I move. So when I got injured, she was obviously the person I went to. I continuously see her, and I'm in contact with her a lot. So she was the one that gave me the awareness of, hey, pelvic positioning. You know, like, this is probably, you know, she would help me analyze my movement patterns, break them down, and help me come to a conclusion of what was causing my hip pain that I was getting. A lot of it is the positioning of my pelvis when I was moving through a squat or a deadlift. And I never even considered the position of my pelvis. You know, when you're like, especially, I wasn't on the newer side of lifting. I was probably 4 or 5 years in at that point. But I was always focusing on doing more weight, not how I was moving. Was focused on how much I was moving, not how I was moving. So she slowed me down. She's awesome, by the way. Super intelligent. Her and I are cut from the same cloth. So
yeah,
the way that she lives her life, the way that she pushes herself to be the best that she can be, I identify with that strongly. It makes me respect her a lot, and I take her word for her. Yeah, I really respect her work and like what her input. So she slowed me down and pointed out, you know, via videoing me my movement patterns, because we video all of our movements.
Yes.
Slowing down and be like, hey, take a look at how you're moving right here. You see in this bottom position of the squat, how the first thing that you do is you dump your pelvis, basically what's happening, if you're dumping your pelvis forward, you're getting a lot of contact in your hips. It's basically using my hips as leverage. Who knows exactly what's happening, but probably some, I would always get pinchiness in my hips and I wouldn't really pay much attention to it. And basically using my joints as leverage rather than maybe using some specific muscles that probably should have been helping out a little bit more. And again, my body was figuring out the way to move the weight. It was smart. It was figuring out how to move the weight in that moment without really any thought of the long-term effects of it. So some people can be fine with this movement pattern, but for me, doing it repeatedly under such heavy load eventually is probably what caused that injury. So she had me pull back a bit. And it aligned with what Brett had told me and what Brett had been programming for me about strict form. Didn't really realize what strict form truly meant until Dr. Jen sewed it down and kind of pointed out what I was accomplishing with that strict form. So again, this is something that I've been thinking about is everybody sees the world through different lenses, especially what we do. Everybody has a different viewpoint, right? So Brett has the physique and the strength building aspect. Dr. Jen has the movement pattern aspect, you know, and we have our own way of looking at things, and a physical therapist might have a different way of looking at things. But if we can take as many different lenses and combine them, that's always what I'm trying to do. I'm trying
to get a clear image.
Yeah, just see it from as many different lenses as possible, because it's basically just tools in your toolbox.
Love that both Brett and Jen were asking you to film your workouts and to show, and I think that's something that as a coach we ask our clients that they don't recognize. Like, I feel like I'm pulling teeth getting clients to send me their videos, and they do eventually, but like, it's a very uncomfortable feeling in a public gym to do it. It's a very awkward like place if you don't have like a camera stand or to just like put yourself out there to film, because it's a very vulnerable thing to see yourself in that frame and see the frame by frame work of what your movement pattern is. Mm-hmm. And we don't necessarily feel what we see in ourselves either. No. We might, like, and I think of just, like, dancing. Like, you're like, didn't I do that? Like, isn't my foot this way? And you're like, no, it's completely opposite. Like, you know, you have to put that into position or perspective. And then what you just mentioned is the fact that your body wasn't thinking about form or technique. The body is going to think about how to move the force, how to push the resistance. And we're not always necessarily focused on safety, that has to be a mental practice that we have to teach ourselves to condition into. Mm-hmm. And now Jen taught you to change your deadlift. How so? Because this could help a lot of people. And I think that I deadlift like you, or we call it the Jefferson, you know, lift, where it's like you roll your back.
Yeah.
And it's true. I have a very strong low back, but I was in a car accident where I was in a rollover accident on the 5 freeway. My car flipped twice and I was hit by a drunk driver. That completely, I don't want to say the word screwed up, but it altered my spine and my back. So I don't have that same curvature in my neck or my low back. And because of that, my deadlift has changed from it too.
Yeah.
I don't feel comfortable doing sumo. And it's funny because now you switch from sumo to conventional recently.
Yeah.
Now all these different practices. And I'm curious why you did that too.
Yeah.
If that has anything to do with your back pain.
Uh-huh.
I feel like the body is going to just want to do what it can to lift up the weight to get to that, you know, that resistance. And so I've tried really hard to focus on building hamstring strength, but I noticed that my lockouts are strong because of hip thrusting.
Yep.
And I've also noticed that my body just naturally wants to curve and roll that way. And it doesn't actually hurt me to do that.
Yeah. Well, first you mentioned like a past injury.
Mm-hmm.
The way that we move in our daily lives is a result, you know, it's multifaceted, but from what I understand, a lot of the patterns that we mimic is patterns that we witness as we're learning how to move. So something that Dr. Jen taught me is that my brother, my dad, and I all have similar low back problems.
Mm.
And she was telling me, you know, teaching me that some of the movements that we do are movements that we see our parents doing. So, which is crazy, you know, that we would, it makes sense that we mimic certain mannerisms of our parents, but the fact that we can mimic movement from our parents too, I find very interesting. But also the way you move is a result of past injuries. So say you have an injury that you never like truly rehab, maybe you get a little bit pain moving in a certain way still. Maybe, you know, you start compensating when you have that injury and now you've taught your body a new movement pattern that it keeps. You know, like basically the way that we're moving is kind of a record of our whole life. It's a history book in a way, you know?
Mm.
So it's telling like our past and what we've dealt with, and we carry a lot of those movement patterns. So to relearn that movement pattern takes so much effort, because it's like a habit that we've created. Not necessarily a good habit, but it's a habit that we've created. So the act of relearning or, you know, changing a movement pattern takes so much mental effort, and it can't just be what you feel. Like, it has to be. You have to see how you're moving to truly understand how you need to change that movement or how you can optimize that movement. So I have the same thing with clients who don't want to film themselves, and I get it. We both go to Ocean Pacific, which is a public gym. It's so much easier to film in Glute Lab than it is to film in Ocean Pacific. Yeah. I don't bring a tripod to Ocean Pacific because there is a part of me that, you know, there's other people around that don't really, and sometimes there is that that negative connotation of being like an influencer, right? Mm-hmm. Because people associate influencers with a little bit of vanity.
Yeah. And with the tripod.
Yeah, with the tripod, exactly. And I think if you have a tripod that it says like something about you, and I just want to tell people, like, I just want to see how I'm moving.
Yes.
You know, I just want to analyze. And so if I'm squatting, I'm always filming. I don't care.
Yeah.
But that's when I start using the water bottle and the phone propped against the trick.
Yeah. And it works just the same. Like,
yeah.
Please do that if that's something that you want to raise your awareness with. And I'm curious what tips you could give somebody who is coming out of an injury or has been injured and they want to get back into lifting heavy again.
Mm-hmm.
What are the foundations from there?
Well, you have to figure out, and again, I've kind of done a deep dive on physical therapy. This is something I feel very passionate about because I've gotten to talk and work with Dr. Jen, who, she's technically a chiropractor by training, but she functions a lot as like a movement specialist, physical therapist, movement awareness specialist. And then a couple different physical therapists, one of them being a physical therapist out in Colorado who I work with online. He's given me, again, just a different lens to view things through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've gotten to learn a good amount about physical therapy, and then also like done a deep dive into my own podcasts. And I just love learning and researching, especially when it's in this field. And if you're coming back from an injury, you have to, first off, you need to take the signs and the signals from your body to figure out what feels good, what doesn't feel good.
Yes.
You know, if your body is giving you, so they give like the 3 out of 10 pain metric. Where if it's giving you like more than a 4 out of 10 pain, 10 being the worst pain you've ever felt, that's probably not a movement that you need to be doing right now, or that your body's, you know, should be doing or safe to be doing at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So they talk a lot about finding that point of entry of what, how, like what movements can you do under how much load is your body going to be able to tolerate? Like where's your tolerance, your capacity at that point? So figuring out how you can move, where the pain is at and where the pain isn't at, how can you build strength in the areas that it isn't at, and the pain, like where the pain is at, where can, like what type of movements can you do to find that 3 out of 10 and below where your body feels safe to do that movement, and then start building strength from there. Because everything, all the best physical therapists that I've worked with, you know, and Dr. Jen, they've all taught me that movement is medicine. So going back to injury prevention, the best way to come back from an injury is not to rest it. Please don't just sit down on the couch and rest it. Like I did that. I made that mistake at first. The best thing that you can do is get back into the gym, because the best physical therapists, they use all the same principles that we do. They use weight as medicine. They use weight as treatment. They use progressive overload. They use movement awareness.
Mm-hmm.
It's all, again, just tools in our toolbox. So if somebody's in pain, they're not going to have them like max out a squat, but you're still going to be squatting in some capacity or doing a knee dominant movement. You're just going to find out, okay, can I tolerate this type of knee dominant movement? No? Okay, how can I regress it? Okay, now that I found where I can tolerate it, let's build strength there in a variety of different ways. Maybe you're going to add reps, maybe you're going to add weight, maybe you're going to increase range of motion.
Yes.
Sound familiar?
Yeah.
You know? And then how can we progress it from there? Okay, so now this Bulgarian split squat is your point of entry, right? So you can do a Bulgarian split squat, but you can't do, you know, something like a full range squat. So you're building strength in that Bulgarian split squat. You're not going to use as much weight, you know, as you would a barbell back squat, but you can build strength there. So you've built strength, and now something that used to flare you up doesn't flare you up. Okay, now what's the next step? You know, how can I progress this movement to, again, raise that tolerance of all my tissues and, you know, all the different structures that you have in there, until, again, pain is very complicated. I'm not pretending to know anything of, like, everything about pain. But basically, like, how can you build your body's tolerance and get it to adapt to the point that it can tolerate the load that you're putting under it? Because guess what? When you go out in your daily life and you perform a lunge movement, maybe you're lunging to pick something up off the ground. Maybe you are, again, like, bending and extending your knee to, like, stand up from a chair, stand up from the toilet, stuff that we all do. If your tolerance is down here, you know, and you're operating right here and tolerance is here, it's like, great, you're not going to throw yourself up. When you do that movement, that unexpected movement that you're not ready for that's here, that's going to be your flare-up. But if in the gym you're building that capacity to here, now when you do that unexpected movement, you're not going to flare yourself up. You have that capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all injury prevention. You know, that's what strength training is. And that's what learning how to rehab something taught me. See, we just build that capacity. And again, like, it's, I'm sure it's, pain is complicated. There's a lot of factors that affect it. But it's all the same fundamentals,
mm-hmm.
which I find amazing.
And how many times have you ever done a program different than what your coach prescribed you? Because I've done the same thing where military press are my least favorite exercise, and I work a way around it. So if I am programmed to do military press, and I'm saying this in quotation marks, program meaning I don't necessarily do what I'm supposed to with it, the program probably calls for, like, let's just say, like, 8-6-4. Like, right, so you do first set 8 reps, 6 reps, 4 reps, and you build up the weight resistance on that. I actually will do just the barbell by itself for 20 reps and do 3 sets of, you know, maybe 20, 15, 10, or 20, 15, 15, or something like that, where it's a different type of burnout, and my body's still getting that movement pattern in, but I'm not stressing it with the overload of the weight. Another thing I'll do is I'll do a dumbbell shoulder press instead, and I actually like the idea of having one-to-one on that, because a barbell does help, but it's nice to get the awareness of singular arm movement, so your body's separating that resistance of, like, one side might be more dominant than the other. You know, you're creating stability, you can feel that out. If you feel like one's shaking, or if you need to work on one side, this will help with imbalances. You can do one arm at a time for more reps. And then my ultimate favorite is putting everything onto a Smith machine, because that's where, like, if you're compensating on one side, or if your body is struggling on that injured side, let's say, for example, if you have one hip that's hurting or one shoulder that's hurting, you can use a Smith machine to help you push from both sides and get the assistance of your opposite or your stronger side.
Mm-hmm.
So I like using Smith machine. I like working around it. I love using bands because you have that constant tension and awareness with that resistance. There's a way around it. You don't necessarily have to do the movement, but do I probably skip it out and, like, do it every other week? Yes, that's me, like, doing the movement rather than once a week as a compound lift. I'll do it every other week as an accessory lift.
Uh-huh.
And it's, like, to be strong, we don't have to do the things that our coaches are always programming us, giving our clients permission right now.
I know. Our clients are like, thank God we knew it.
Right? But also communicate with us and tell us why. Like, it's really important to know, why do you not want to do that movement? And it's important to also stick with the movements that you like and do it for more sets, more repetitions. Do what your body likes and do more of that. Rinse and repeat.
Yeah. Can I ask, so do you not like doing standing military press?
Absolutely cannot. I love seated.
But you love seated.
You
love Smith machine.
Yes, so I'll do a seated Smith machine all day long.
There's another parallel with us. I hate standing. I can't get into the right position. I've talked to Brett about this. Maybe it's our, because we have a similar tuck to our pelvis.
Yeah. Oh, that too.
I can't get stable enough in a standing military press to build any strength. I basically only do different variations of seated, because I find, like, I have to, like, tuck my pelvis under so much just to get that same stability, and it's really challenging standing. So I, like, obviously we've talked about how strong I am. I'm not strong in standing military press, and it drove me crazy, and I tried over and over again. I could never figure it out, and then I started doing seated stuff, and I was like, wait, this is amazing. So it's interesting to hear you have the same problem. So I wonder if there's some sort of similarity.
Me too.
Because I think Kiana's kind of the same. Kiana
does
staggered stance.
Ah.
And so she gets around it.
And at the last strong lifting, I remember it was almost like a snatch. I, like, took a step forward
because
my body was trying to find balance with it too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're just unstable with it. Probably because, anatomy. So
anatomy.
I just love seeing the parallels. You know,
that's
asking about parallels like that.
Yeah.
I wonder what Brett does, because Brett has similar movement patterns to us we've talked about.
He just roughs it out and tells us that he's got it.
Yeah. He's also just so strong.
I know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Okay, so to anybody who is listening, as to what projects you have coming on, how can we sign up with you? How can we join you? How can we work with you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I am about to release that Mastering the Foundations, that video bundle. So again, that's going to be those 5 videos. It'll just be a one-time purchase. And it's truly giving you all the little tips and tricks of mastering those foundations. So this was originally created for my hospital coworkers that wanted to, didn't have the time to actually come meet with me, you know, consistently every week, but wanted to start a program who I wanted to give them more than just a program. You know, I wanted to give them as many tools as possible so they could have the highest chance of success. For all my clients, you know, any client that starts with me, I also give them an intro video bundle that goes over what is progressive overload, the separate videos, kind of like a little mini course, I guess. I think there's probably 4 or 5 videos that what is progressive overload, the importance of stimulating reps and pushing yourself, like what that looks like, how to warm up properly, how to utilize the program that I've given them, and like importance of following a program so that they have, and they're fun videos. Elizabeth helped me make them. They look so good. Elizabeth is so talented. So she's helped me make both video series, and it's aimed at giving everybody that baseline education so that not only are they getting a program, but they're getting that baseline knowledge that they need in order to help them progress properly. Mm-hmm. So all my clients get that initial, they have the ability to buy that Mastering the Foundations package. And then I also, I program for people. I stopped offering it as much, but one of the stuff that I do is for people that feel confident in the gym that might not need one-on-one coaching per se, I give the ability to just write them programs so they have all that knowledge with me, or they have all that knowledge from me. So we talk about what their goals are, what equipment they have access to, what they specifically want to focus on, and I write them a program. And I have an app that for each exercise day program, I've written up how to set it up, how to execute it, and there's a video of me actually doing the movement as well. So they have all of that. So they're able to log their reps, log their weight, and make sure they're using progressive overload.
Good.
Yeah. And then I also offer one-on-one coaching.
Yes.
Yeah, which is kind of my bread and butter. I love doing coaching like that. It's so cool to be able to work with people, you know, in a variety of different places. Like I have clients in New Zealand, I have clients in the UK, clients all over America, and it's cool to be able to help so many different types of people.
And then if anybody's in San Diego, they can train with you in person too?
Yeah, they can train with me. My clients that are in San Diego, they're hybrid, so they get all that online portion, but then we also meet in person too, it's really special meeting in person.
Yeah, I do the same thing. It's like almost helping them help me because I get to see their form in person and really tweak what I want without having to explain it in a lengthy detail through virtual training, which is nice. It's great. But it's nice when you can see it in person. There's something special about training people with that physical contact.
Yeah, and just getting to know them a little bit more. And I think all personal trainers enjoy that emotional connection with their clients.
Because not every person's body is the same, like we were just talking about. Yeah.
You can make amazing progress online. We all know that at this point. We've seen what other coaches can do. We've seen like what we've done with our own clients. We know online is an awesome avenue, but there's something really special about being in person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely my passion project these days is working with people in healthcare. I see the lives everybody lives, especially the doctors, and how rigorous the doctors work towards helping other people, you know, not having enough time for themselves. And so I've been working with a couple doctors that I work with up at UCSD. I work with a couple doctors over on the East Coast and do my one-on-one coaching with them. So it's really, really rewarding to be able to help people in the healthcare field and help them find the time for themselves, because that's what a good coach does.
Yes.
Good coach doesn't just give you a program. Good coach listens to what your lifestyle is, listens to how much time you're feasibly able to commit to this, and then figures out how to optimize that time to make your time in the gym as efficient and as productive as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And works around your schedule. And that's what I pride myself. Because we all know, like, 3 days a week is more than enough.
Yes.
I programmed for my best friend that I mentioned earlier, the one I've known since I was 18, got her into the gym, going to Ocean Pacific, and she's been doing 3 days a week. You've seen her.
Yes.
Yeah, Victoria. She's made amazing progress. She's been doing it for almost a year now, and you can see the difference. I see her every day, you know, so I took
you
a look at
her. You can still see the difference.
I took a look at her the other day. She came out in workout clothes I looked at her and I looked away and was like, oh my God. It's like, Victoria, look at you. And when you look at yourself, everybody, you can't really tell. I was like, you see the difference, right? Except for like the past 2 months I've been asking her, you see the difference, right? And at first she's like, no, I don't really see it. And now she's saying, yeah, I see it.
You feel it, everything.
Feel it, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to put the link to your course for people to sign up on the show notes, your Instagram, everything else. Do you have a website?
I'll be launching a website in about 1 or 2 weeks.
Okay, so then I'll put that on there too.
Yeah. 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 My company name is MoveMed. MoveMed. Stands for Movement is Medicine. Truly believe that everything that we do in the gym is medicine for our bodies. It's strengthening. It's building confidence, like we talked about. You can't walk up to a bar and lift 400 pounds off the ground if you don't have confidence in yourself. Mm-hmm. We haven't really talked a ton about that, but that is one of the best benefits of strength training.
For real. Your ability, what you're capable of.
Yeah. So it builds strength, it builds confidence. We all know it builds a physique at this point. Mm-hmm. It's injury prevention. It's medicine that we all, it's a non-negotiable.
How fitting having you on this show. M3, Movement, Mindset, Medicine, right there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh. MoveMed. I love the name.
I didn't realize that's what F3 stood for. Mm-hmm. Yeah, MoveMed. MoveMed is medicine. Yeah. I really wanted to kind of appeal to people in healthcare to let them know that I understand what they're dealing with.
Yes.
The obstacles that exist. And my newest project, my newest plan, it's a secret plan right now, but it won't be secret much longer. At UCSD, I'm going to try to figure out a way that either get us access to a gym there or build our own little gym. We have an hour lunch break, and I'm going to start getting my coworkers in the gym in real time.
We've talked about this.
It's so important. Like, if you have an hour lunch break, just getting 30 minutes of movement, 45 minutes of movement, 30 minutes, a couple times a week, will do you wonders.
The military, fire department, they all require this BT. Why does the hospital do that? That's the most important place for people to be focusing on their health.
Yeah, yeah. I was a beach lifeguard for 7 years. We get an hour each our shifts.
Yeah, PT.
Mm-hmm. PT, yeah. So why isn't everybody else getting PT? They have a physical job, but again, moving patients, that's physical. I need strength for that.
Also, leading by example.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. If we're going to take care of everybody else, we need to take care of ourselves.
Well, thank you, Vanessa. I'm so glad you came on this show, girl. Yeah, I can't wait to have you back already, too, because there's so much more we need to touch on.
Yeah, yeah, we definitely have a lot. I could talk forever about lifting.
This is great, guys.
Thank you for joining me on another episode as we learned and explored all things movement, mindset, and medicine. As always, my goal for each episode of this podcast is to share innovative tools and techniques to help you thrive and find stability with your overall health and personal development, alongside the growth of the world around us. Please share this with someone you know will benefit from this episode, as well as rate and review. This helps us reach more people and provide feedback as to how we can better help each of you. Make sure to check out our community website, www.mermaidmethod.com, to learn more about our upcoming events, eco-friendly products, and coaching programs. Now let's make massive waves together.